Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. It should be fun. After all, Scott has inside jokes with people he's never even met.
Yeah, I'm gonna lay that one on him. I have to think that as an offensive lineman, that's the worst thing you can do. And we're going to ask our guest. He was a team captain at Auburn as an offensive lineman. He's now an analyst for ESPN and the SEC Network. Cole Kublik, thanks for hopping on this Atama Guest Hotline.
Hey, guys.
Cole, I'm watching Kentucky beat Florida. 15 penalties, 115 yards, 8 of them are false starts. And, man, as a former offensive lineman, how much were you twisting seeing that?
It's not good and it's not comfortable, but, you know, it's where you've got to try to find a way to make things a little bit easier. Now you see all these offenses go into the clap and then they try to do, you know, two claps or a fake clap. And when you get into an environment like that, I know people will look at the capacity at Kroger Field and say, oh, it can't be that loud. I've called plenty of games there and I've called plenty of Florida-Kentucky games there. It gets loud. Trust me. It is a cool, fun, loud environment. And obviously, when that thing gets to you emotionally and mentally, you start thinking about it and it starts impacting you, it almost becomes more easier to do the more you do it. And so when you jump once or twice, now you're second-guessing yourself. Now your quarterback's maybe second-guessing when he's going to actually give you that clap or give you the second clap, and then things just get discombobulated. So it wasn't fun watching. I hate it for just about anybody, but it's tough once it gets raring that way.
How do you alleviate that, though? And, you know, you're an expert at the offensive line. You played offensive line at the highest level. What do you do if that's what you work on all week? I mean, the quarterback, I guess, can only scream so loud. I don't know. It seems to me to be almost an unfixable problem if it's that loud.
Well, I think the first thing you look at is you want to try to simplify the snap count, but you also have to keep in mind when you do that, then you give the defensive line or the front seven the advantage. So if they're trying to bring pressure – or if they're an attacking defense, you give them the advantage of getting off the ball first. So I would be less concerned about that and more concerned about my group being on the same page. So get to a very familiar snap count. Get to one that's easy that you know. Or if it's the noise that's making a difference, you might just have your guys look in, locate the football, and go off movement. That becomes difficult because then when there's movement, you then have to retrain your eyes to refocus on the defensive lineman or the player you're going to intend to block. That also is not easy. So being in gun when that happens makes it even more difficult because you're not going on verbal cues a lot of times. You're just going on movement. And being in a two-point stance, facing the guys that are going to tee off on you, it becomes very complicated.
When you were playing at Auburn, what was the most difficult environment sound-wise for you guys each time you went?
I mean, the most difficult that I had was Tennessee because I played in Knoxville the year after they won a national championship, and that's the loudest stadium that I've ever heard. Now, I played in Baton Rouge at night twice. You know, one of them was 99. We ran them out of the stadium, so that wasn't very loud. But 97, we went to overtime. That was very loud. I played in the Swamp when they were SEC champions. That was extremely loud. So it would be up to those three, but the loudest that I played was Tennessee. The year after they won a national title, and that place was packed, and they were going. I mean, it was unlike anything I've heard.
You know, you mentioned that Auburn win in 1999. I think before this Saturday, that was the last time Auburn won in Baton Rouge. Is that correct?
It was correct. Yes. So we had gone 21 years since Auburn had won in Baton Rouge, and they called it the cigar game because we smoked cigars on the field after the game. That was something that Tommy Tuberville and his staff kind of implemented. Ended up the NCAA didn't like that. So we actually had to go pay for our cigars in our team meeting on Monday. But it was a fun one. It was a good game. But it was I was glad to see those guys sort of get past it. I'm tired of sharing the pictures, tired of people calling me just so we could talk about 1999, a game that obviously had nothing to do with what those guys did Saturday night.
We're joined by Cole Kublik, cigar aficionado, SEC Network analyst. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Kublik. And Cole, how wide is the gap right now between Bama, Georgia, and not just the rest of college football, but specifically the Southeastern Conference?
I think it's pretty big. I think it's a pretty big gap because there's just not a lot of people physically that bring what they bring to the table. And then from a speed, athleticism, just kind of overall talent perspective, I don't know if there are a lot of teams that are going to be able to match up. So, I mean, I think it's as big as it's been in a while. I mean, you're just talking about where those two are, where everybody else is. I mean, Georgia just smashed a top 10 football team with their backup quarterback. And I don't know what other indication people need that. I mean, we had a guy calling to my show this morning saying that he thinks this is the year that everybody could be beat and any team could be defeated on any given day. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm not sure what game you watched Saturday morning, but I had no indication of that based on what I watched with what Georgia did to Arkansas.
You know, is the Georgia-Arkansas result, was that the more surprising of the two between that and Bama-Ole Miss?
I kind of thought they'd both go that way. I thought Georgia – it may have been more surprising that Georgia had the amount of success that they had early. And then the fact, too, that Ole Miss had just the little amount of success overall offensively that they had. But, you know, I thought Arkansas would be able to hang, and then depth and talent would kind of take over late, and they would maybe add another score or two. And, you know, it might look like a 14-17 point game, but it actually wouldn't have played that way for four quarters. You know, I think that Alabama game, that was about the way I thought that thing would go, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought Pete Golding, their defensive coordinator, would sit back a little bit. I didn't think he'd be overly aggressive. And I didn't think that, based on the way Lane was handling himself going into the game, and I'm not just talking about the pregame interview, it didn't feel like he had a ton of confidence in what they were going to be able to achieve. That was the way I took it. I don't know exactly how he meant it or what he meant, but that was my feeling going in.
You know, the thing is, I mean, these are still two good football teams, I think. Ole Miss, especially Arkansas. I'm really high on Arkansas. I think going forward they're going to have success. I mean, I agree with you. Bama and Georgia are just in a different universe. Give me your assessment, though, of Arkansas. We see a lot of teams have a one-year surge, and you know, when they have some success, then they'll regress. And they've got the super seniors and all that at Arkansas, and I'm sure a lot of their success can be credited to that this year. But I'm of the mind what Sam Pittman is doing is sustainable. Would you agree, disagree?
Absolutely. No, I think he has changed the culture there already. And now it's just going to come down to getting more talent. We know he can recruit. We know he knows how to get that done. But, you know, let's not forget, we can talk about how bad that game looked, how bad that game was. And it wasn't a strong performance by Arkansas. They were bullied up front. That's something that's actually not really happened to them very often since he's been there. But let's not forget the fact that team was just ranked in the top 10. They beat Texas. They beat Texas A&M this year. And we're not even at the halfway point of the season. So I think we look at sort of where Arkansas was, and I'm not pointing the finger at you, but a lot of folks just completely bypass how far ahead of schedule they are. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the Arkansas's win total was like 4 this year, and last year I think it was 2. So Sam Pittman is absolutely ahead of schedule. It's going to be tough for him to hold on to Kendall Briles and Barry Odom, but those guys are doing an amazing job with that roster right now.
Yeah, it was pretty brilliant how he built his staff. I mean, here's a guy that, had 2 years of JUCO head coaching experience. Everything else has been as an assistant. He brings in, you know, Barry Odom, head coaching experience, and then Kendall Briles, who learned from his dad, an offensive guru. I thought that was masterful. And Cole, I'd like to get your take on this. I, you know, a loss is never good, but I think Sam Pittman's going to come out of that loss having learned a lot, because that was his first time as a head coach on such a big stage.
I think you're probably right. I think it's more about the fit with Sam than it is, you know, do you have head coaching experience? Because I think he's a guy that has been around so many different head coaches and has been around so many different places that, you know, he had the acumen to be able to handle this. And he's smart enough to put the right people around him to help him be successful. So I think all those things together are what got him to this point. And he's not going to change it. It's not going to be different. So this now just comes down to, you know, can they continue to find ways to be better in recruiting and find ways to develop the talent that's on that roster to help them become a team that can get on the field with Georgia or Alabama and physically be competitive, even if maybe the plan doesn't go exactly the way they drew it up.
And Cole, before we let you go, let's do a heat check in College Station in Baton Rouge. Where's it hotter?
Well, Jimbo just got an extension, so I mean, he's making 75 guaranteed before the extension. So I don't know how, like, where would you even go if you're Texas A&M? I mean, I understand that you know Ed Orgeron won a national championship. So the thing about running him out of there, just a few years removed from that, look at LSU's schedule. I think they might only be favored in one more game the rest of the way. So I could see that going where that's going now, but. I mean, I don't know how Jimbo Fisher can be on the hot seat with the fact that you gave him an extension. He's playing a backup quarterback. He's had three offensive linemen injured. He's played 12 different offensive line combinations this year. Like, should they have been better? Yes. Should they be moving the ball better? Absolutely. But, you know, I'm not going to look at him and say that all of a sudden he doesn't know how to coach or there's a guy out there that I definitely think could be doing it better.
He was team captain at Auburn, now an analyst for ESPN and the SEC Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Cole Kublik. Cole, appreciate you joining us this morning, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always enjoy it.
All right, appreciate it. It's Cole Kublik of the ESPN and SEC Network joining us on the Saitama Guest Hotline.